First, we can study charts and graphs and look for that curve we're supposed to be flattening and obsess over the daily testing numbers and read all of the COVID-19 headlines we want. But we also need to understand something a little further, the why behind the news. And we also wonder, what questions do you have about how viruses work? We're going to try to answer them right now. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. And we're talking with Thomas Friedrich. He's a professor of virology at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. His lab works to understand how pandemic viruses emerge, spread, and cause disease. And he's studied HIV, AIDS, influenza, Zika, and now he's working on COVID-19. Tom, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be with you.
As a virologist, when a new virus like this emerges, where does your mind go first? What do you need to learn?
Well, there are a lot of questions. So we know that viruses need to sort of solve a number of evolutionary puzzles in order to jump from wherever they have been before, maybe infecting animals, into humans and then spread through the human population. And when we look for evidence of how viruses might do this, we see that animal viruses getting into humans in the first place is actually perhaps surprisingly not the rate limiting step, if you will. It's not the hardest part. Humans get exposed to animal viruses all the time, but how they evolve to transmit from one person to another and deal with our immune systems and cause disease, these are all questions that we want to understand for any new virus so that we can figure out how to stop its spread, how to treat people who are infected with that virus, how to create vaccines, and ultimately, hopefully, better understand this entire process so that we can make it harder for the next virus to cause a pandemic.
I think it is fair to say that it can be hard to grasp the idea that this particular virus that causes COVID-19 did not exist for us shortly ago, and then suddenly it has just turned our lives upside down. I mean, where did these viruses come from, and how do we really understand that?
Also a great question. So a lot of the viruses that cause serious human disease ultimately come from animals, and they jump into humans through agricultural activities or, consumption of animals or, all sorts of other proximity to animals. Maybe in the case of bat viruses like COVID-19 is ultimately a bat virus through, collection of bat guano for fertilizer, as people do around the world. So there are many ways that we can come into contact with viruses from animals. And then sometimes not only do those viruses infect one person, but they may be able to grow well in that person and then get from one person to another. And when it's a totally new virus to the human population, like SARS coronavirus 2 is, the virus that causes COVID-19 disease, none of us has pre-existing immunity to it. So we are all susceptible. And that means that in the right circumstances, as happened to occur this time, we can all easily become infected by a virus that is transmitted through the air.
You were part of a team that developed animal models for Zika virus, helped us understand how Zika is transmitted, how it evolves, how it causes disease. Now you're working on COVID-19. Why exactly are animal models helpful in trying to combat a virus that is affecting our human bodies?
That's a really good question. And I think it's important to note that, we as researchers take the responsibility of using animals to understand disease processes really seriously. And we don't want to do it unless there's a really good reason to do so. Unfortunately, a lot of the questions that I was talking about how viruses, overcome evolutionary barriers, how they may foil our immune system, how a test vaccine or treatment might work in the body and work against the virus, are all things that are really essentially impossible to predict just from first principles, just from what we think might happen if we put a compound or a vaccine into a patient. And so, for example, right now there's over 80 candidate vaccines that have been listed by the World Health Organization as in development, in some stage of development for COVID-19. There is no way even if we stipulate that all of those vaccines might be safe. There is no way to test all of them in humans, certainly not in the time frame that we need to get conclusive evidence to move forward and make vaccines for the global population. So we need some way of down selecting only those vaccines and treatments that are the most promising and most likely to be effective with the smallest number of side effects, and move those forward into large-scale human testing when we're confident that they can be safe. One particular question with vaccines, for example, is that some vaccines in the past have actually, in certain circumstances, made the disease that they were trying to prevent worse. So this is called disease enhancement. Vaccines that have tended to do this have been pulled off the market, and so we don't want to be in a situation where, you know, we have an expanding pandemic and we rush to implement the first apparently successful vaccine without making sure that it's not actually going to make the disease worse when we're trying to prevent it.
Thomas Friedrich studies viruses, how they emerge and spread and cause disease. And he's helping us understand how viruses like the one that causes COVID-19 infect us. You just talked about vaccines. What about the concept of antibodies? That word has been making headlines a lot lately in regard to figuring out if a person has antibodies and if that could be used to try to prevent COVID-19 in the future. Help us understand that aspect of this.
Sure. So there's a few different questions that the antibodies have sort of come up around. And one is in treatment. So when someone gets infected with SARS coronavirus 2, the COVID-19 virus, they develop an immune response. Antibodies are part of that. And the job of antibodies really is to latch on to invading microbes and hopefully prevent them from getting inside our cells. So COVID-19 virus, like any other virus, is barely even really alive. Like, it has to get inside our cells and force them to make more copies of virus. And then those viruses go off and try to infect new cells. So your antibodies are there to try to prevent this from happening. Now, it takes a while for your body to make antibodies once you've been exposed to a virus or other microbe. And so the job of vaccines is really to kind of train your immune system, provide it with sort of a version of that virus, and get you to make antibodies before you encounter the real virus itself. Once people have actually encountered it, they make these antibodies. We could take a sample of blood from a person that is rich with antibodies and then even potentially transfuse that into another person and help them clear their infection faster. This is so-called convalescent plasma that you may have heard about that's being tested. So you can use the antibodies of one person who's already had the disease to maybe treat another person.
Yeah, it seems like a real opportunity with all of the different fronts we're trying to tackle here when it comes to this new coronavirus. We've got Tom in Milwaukee who has a question for us. Welcome to Central Time, Tom.
Hi, thank you. I would like to know if in order to study viruses or to understand how to deal with them, to combat them in humans, is it necessary to understand the concept of evolution?
All right. Thanks, Tom. Thomas, what do you think about that? Because, you know, viruses do change, and that is one of the reasons that makes them kind of dangerous.
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, evolution is kind of the fundamental principle of all biology, and viruses evolve so rapidly that we can really see it in real time. That's one of the things that my lab studies. And so we see it, for example, in influenza virus. The whole reason why we need a flu shot every year is because influenza viruses evolve to kind of avoid detection by our immune systems. And so we're always kind of in this arms race with the influenza virus. We make an immune response against it. It avoids that immune response. We make an immune response to the new virus. It avoids that. And one of the questions that we're going to have for the future is, you know, will this COVID-19 virus stick with us in the human population? And if so, will it begin to evolve to avoid our own immune responses. This is something that scientists are keeping a close eye on. I should say there is so far no indication that that is occurring. But if the virus stays with us for years into the future, it's something that we want to be prepared for.
All right. Certainly not the last conversation we'll have about this. Thank you so much, Tom, for sharing your expertise with us today.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
Thomas Friedrich is a professor of virology at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. His lab works to understand how pandemic viruses emerge, spread, and cause disease.